Chapter 9, Becoming White House Press Secretary. The call that weekend came as a surprise. Ari phoned me at home to let me know that he would be announcing that Monday, May 19th, 2003, that he would be resigning his position as press secretary effective the middle of July. The reason was simple: burnout. Only a few months earlier, Ari had volunteered in one of our casual conversations that he was planning on staying put for a while. At the time, he still seemed full of energy and enthusiasm for the job. I know he really enjoyed conducting briefings and sparring with the press under the Klieg lights. But he had served in the position through 9/11, the war in Afghanistan, and what at that moment appeared to be a war in Iraq headed toward a successful conclusion. Standing in front of a mission accomplished banner on board the USS Lincoln off the coast of San Diego, the president had only a couple of weeks earlier declared, "Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed." Ari had already been through a lot, serving as the administration's chief spokesperson during some very tumultuous times. Ari was also a newlywed, having been married the preceding November. I couldn't fully appreciate it then, but in subsequent years, I would come to learn just how quickly the continual daily wear and tear can sneak up on a press secretary. We all have a limit on the number of times we can recharge our batteries, and Ari had reached his. During our conversation, Ari said he'd recommended that I replace him. I told Ari he'd served the president well and would be missed, and I expressed my deepest appreciation to him. After we hung up, it started to sink in that I might soon be thrust into the spotlight Ari had occupied. I didn't know for sure, of course, but I felt I'd shown myself to be completely loyal to Bush. He trusted me. Our relationship was strong. I demonstrated that I knew the tone the president liked to set, and I had a keen understanding of the way he thought and the principles on which he made decisions. All reasons Karen Hughes had thought I was a good complement to Ari with his Washington experience. I'd also shown I could do the job the president wanted me to do on and off the podium. I'd filled in for Ari seamlessly at various times, and when he was away getting married, I'd assumed all his duties and conducted several back-to-back briefings over an extended period. And I had shown I knew how to handle tragedies and crisis situations, most recently on Saturday, February 1st, 2003. Ari was out of town that weekend when the Space Shuttle Columbia broke apart upon re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere, killing 7 courageous astronauts, 6 Americans, and 1 Israeli. At such times, I understood it was especially important to provide the press with facts and information for history's sake, and so they could report the news fully and accurately to the American people. After receiving the phone call from the Situation Room that morning, I immediately headed into the office. I was there to meet the president when he returned from Camp David to address the nation, and I shadowed his movements, taking careful notes. I will never forget standing in the Oval Office as he spoke by phone to the families of the astronauts, who were all gathered in a conference room at Kennedy Space Center. None of us could imagine what they were going through, but we knew it was beyond painful. All I could do was pray for them in my own personal and private way, as I am sure many others in the room and across the country were doing. The president offered the family members his sincerest condolences and prayers, calling it a tragic day for America. When the call concluded, the president had to step out of the Oval Office into his private area ever so briefly. He was greatly pained by the call to the families and needed a few seconds to gather himself before heading into a briefing on the tragedy in the nearby Roosevelt Room. Later that afternoon, following the president's remarks to the nation, I gaggled with reporters and provided the press with facts and information from the president's day. Just as on 9/11, all I could think was why. Why did it have to happen? And how much I would have preferred never to have had to deal with it. But this was the reality of White House life. We always had to be ready for the unexpected. Everything seemed to happen fast after Ari announced his departure. By the middle of the week of May 19th, I had met with Chief of Staff Andy Card to discuss expectations on both sides. On Sunday, I spoke with the president. Bush had hosted his close ally, Japanese Prime Minister Koizumi, at his home in Crawford on Thursday and Friday, and then spent the weekend there. During the return flight aboard Air Force One, he officially offered me the job. "I told everyone there was no need to consider anyone else," the president said. "We had our man as far as I was concerned." "I am honored, sir," I responded. "I will do my best to serve you and the country well." "You should feel honored," the president agreed. There are not very many people who get to say they were White House press secretary. It is a pretty small fraternity. It had been a whirlwind week for me. My life had changed so quickly, and with my regular duties to tend to, I had little time to let it all sink in completely and to think through all the necessary longer-term considerations I should be exploring. The president and I knew each other well enough. I knew what the president expected, I knew what the job entailed, and I knew how he wanted me to do it. But I did want to make sure of a couple of things. One was access to Bush. When I asked the president about that, he reassured me. "Absolutely," the president said. "I know you need that to do your job. You will have access to me anytime you need to see me." The second was access to important meetings. I wanted to make sure I was included in all the presidential meetings, from policy briefings to world leader meetings, that Ari had attended. "That too was not a problem," the president said. I had thought about going further and asking about a couple of meetings that Ari had not been included in. I probably should have asked, but I didn't, deciding that those might be more effectively pursued gradually through Andy or other avenues. I knew the president's mindset when it came to the press secretary. He did not want his spokesman stepping beyond the talking points or making news unnecessarily or unexpectedly. Part of it was based on Bush's personal preference of making the news on his own time frame, not letting the media control the agenda. Part of it was based on his distrust of the national media, which he believed harbored a liberal bias against Republicans. Knowing how closely the press secretary has to interact with the press all day, the president wanted him to have access to necessary information. But his definition of necessary would keep the press secretary on a relatively short leash. Early in his presidency, in a comment noted by the White House press corps, the president had unintentionally undermined Ari by saying there would be times when he would tell Ari he was not going to let him know something. When that occurred, he added, he would expect Ari not to question it. Eventually, many of the president's key advisors would come to share the same attitude. But everything was happening at once, and I had little time to think about the job offer from a selfish perspective, to consider whether accepting the job was in my own best interest. I'd long ago fully committed myself to serving Bush. My first instinct, as a strong believer in public service, was to view his latest call for me to serve as his chief spokesman not just as a great personal opportunity, but as a duty. I've also always been one who believes that God opens doors for a reason. That I felt was happening now. I had never plotted out a course to become the White House press secretary. I had simply stepped through the doors that had been opened to me, and now they had led to this moment. The reason for the invitation to enter this particular door might be beyond my comprehension, but my faith in God and His plan for me was strong. But it's a natural human tendency to question things, and in fact, my view of faith teaches me to do so. Once I had time to catch my breath, soon after accepting the job, my reservations about going through with it became so serious that I delayed the formal announcement until the latter part of June. My excuse was that I wanted time to prepare quietly outside the glare of the spotlight. Once it was known publicly that I would be the new press secretary, that opportunity would be gone. But I also used this time to consult with some of my most trusted advisors. My political mentor, my mother, my wise older brother Mark, who has a good common sense despite his dual doctoral status as a PhD and MD, and the newest member of my inner circle, my fiancée Jill. I had proposed at the end of March. They all encouraged me to go forward, calling it a great opportunity. They advised me to do it for a couple of years and see how it went. In any case, the experience would be extraordinarily beneficial. But my doubts persisted. I wondered whether I really wanted to move into the spotlight of Washington with all its ugliness and pettiness. Having grown up with a mother in politics, I'd never cared for the bitterness that crept into the discourse, nowhere more so than in Washington. Did I really want to put myself, and now Jill, under the political microscope? The insults and name-calling wouldn't bother me as much as the barbs aimed at Mom when I was a kid. Maybe because of that boyhood experience, I knew that even the most hate-filled, mean-spirited attacks wouldn't faze me. But would it really be worth it? Something about the situation nagged at my gut. The big question was whether I would have enough freedom, flexibility, and access to do the job effectively and be the kind of press secretary I hoped to be. Would I be privy to the real rationales behind every important administration decision? Would I be permitted to witness the interplay between political pressure and the national interest that helped to shape policy decisions, or would I simply be presented with the final product and told to sell it willy-nilly? Would I be able to consistently help shape the administration's message and influence it in the direction of transparency and candor, or would I be kept in the dark at times? At the time, it was hard to explain this to the people I looked to for personal advice. You had to have lived these issues inside the Bush White House. Only today do I fully appreciate it and realize I should have done more to change it at the time, not gradually after I started, but before I accepted the offer. I was assured I'd have necessary access to the president and to most presidential meetings, which meant I'd witness the shaping of many of the policies I'd be expected to defend. This was standard treatment for a White House press secretary, and it was important. A press secretary had to be in the know to be effective. But it was also clear that there would be limits to my access. Like Ari, I would probably not be included in some key decision-making discussions, particularly some informal, very small meetings when Bush wanted information compartmentalized and restricted to as few people as possible and not made public until later. The press secretary was excluded from strategery meetings. In addition, Bush did not feel the press secretary needed to be a regular invitee to National Security Council meetings. And the daily communications meeting in the Oval, which included the president, the vice president, Andy Card, Karl Rove, Condi Rice, and Karen Hughes, and later Dan Bartlett, also excluded the press secretary. There were some ways for getting around some of the exclusions, though not the primary ones specifically mentioned above, although I made some effort to be included in those. Sometimes it meant just showing up at a meeting you hadn't been invited to. Other times, it was possible to get complete and timely information from others who'd attended the meeting. And still other times, I could go directly to the president, who would either tell me what I needed to know himself or, if necessary, make a phone call to the necessary advisor. These workarounds would almost always get me the information I needed. I also felt I might have a leg up on Ari when it came to being informed. I had a longer-standing relationship with the president, grounded in our shared Texas roots. I felt well-regarded and trusted by everyone else in the inner circle, perhaps more so than Ari had been. For example, when Condi Rice learned that Ari had been reading the notes from the president's calls with world leaders, she immediately took away his authority to do so. The way around it was to just show up to the Oval during important calls and listen into them live. My impression was that Karen Hughes sometimes regarded Ari as a little too freewheeling at the podium. For example, there was the time Ari created a mini-press firestorm when he suggested the Clinton White House's attempt to shoot the moon on Middle East peace had actually resulted in more violence.